police and students clash over pro-Palestinian protests on U.S. college campuses. Tick-tock, tick-tock. The clock is running on a tick-tock ban.
Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts.
And Voyager 1 is 24 billion kilometers from Earth. And NASA got it to start sending data back.
Voyager 1 is 163 times further away than the Earth is from the Sun.
Today is Thursday, April 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Police tangled with student demonstrators in Texas and California, while new encampments popped up Wednesday at Harvard and other colleges as school leaders are trying to find a way to defuse a growing wave of pro-Palestinian protests.
It's a mess. It's very chaotic. Your faculty this morning received an email saying that they were going to be shutting this protest down before it even started.
That was in Texas. In Los Angeles at the University of Southern California.
What we just saw was an act of USC acting aggressively and failing to defend and in fact being the aggressor against its students, against its student body, who were protesting completely peacefully.
In New York at Columbia University, U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson jumped into the fray.
My intention is to call President Biden after we leave here and share with him what we have seen with our own two eyes and demand that he take action. There is executive authority that be appropriate. If this is not contained quickly and if these threats and intimidation are not stopped, there is an appropriate time for the National Guard. We have to bring order to these campuses. We cannot allow this to happen around the country. We are better than this.
And at the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Students should feel safe. Communities should feel safe. And we can't stay silent. Obviously, it is a deeply painful moment. He sees that. He understands that.
She said the White House was closely monitoring the situation on college campuses, saying people have the right to protest publicly, but not to engage in physical intimidation or calls for violence, citing some alarming rhetoric. Hamas released what it says is a current video of an Israeli-American man held captive in Gaza since October 7th. The parents of Hirsch Goldberg-Poland made a plea to negotiating parties and told their son to stay strong after seeing him in the video.
Seeing a video of Hirsch today is overwhelming. We're relieved to see him alive, but we are also concerned about his health and well-being, as well as that of all of the other hostages and all of those suffering in this region.
Israel says it will proceed with a ground offensive in Rafah. It appears they're building a tent city in Khan Yunis to move people from Rafah before the military operation begins. We're following these other stories from around the world. North Macedonia's right-wing candidate Gordana Siljanovska Dakova claimed a comprehensive victory in the first round of presidential elections on Wednesday, the first in a series of votes that could decide whether the Balkan country will join the European Union. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez on Wednesday said he will suspend public duties until next week to decide whether he wants to continue leading the government after a court launched a preliminary probe of his wife on charges of influence peddling and business corruption. Slovakia's populist government on Wednesday adopted a controversial law affecting RTVS public television and radio, which it accuses of lacking impartiality. The move has been heavily criticized by the opposition and media rights groups like Reporters Without Borders. The U.S. Supreme Court is wading back into the battle over abortion access. Justices appeared divided on Wednesday in a case pitting Idaho's strict Republican-backed abortion ban against a federal law that ensures that patients can receive emergency care. In Arizona, a proposed repeal of the state's near-total ban on abortions has won approval from the state house, clearing its first hurdle a week after a court concluded the state can enforce its 1864 law, which only offers an exception for saving the patient's life. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, U.S. President Joe Biden is making reproductive rights a centerpiece of his re-election campaign, blaming his opponent, Donald Trump, for opening the way to stricter state abortion laws. In this presidential campaign, Trump is pursuing a more moderate position on abortion than some in his Republican Party prefer. VOA correspondent Scott Stern has our story.
Joe Biden campaigned on reproductive rights in Florida, where a state ban on abortion beyond 6 weeks becomes law next week.
It's criminalizing reproductive health care from before women even know whether they're pregnant. I mean, this is bizarre.
The Florida abortion law will be one of the nation's most restrictive and is a victory for the state's conservative Republican leaders, says University of Miami law professor Caroline Mala Corbin.
For those people whose religion teaches that life begins at conception, and therefore pregnancy is the moral equivalent of a human being, this decision is obviously triumph.
It's also a political challenge for Donald Trump, who says the Florida law goes too far, but who also wants to remind anti-abortion voters that he ended federal abortion protections with Supreme Court appointments that shifted the judicial majority on the court and overturned Roe v. Wade. The Biden campaign sees that as a political opportunity.
For 50 years, the court ruled that there was a fundamental constitutional right to privacy. But 2 years ago, that was taken away. Let's be real clear. There's one person responsible for this nightmare, and he's acknowledged and he brags about it, Donald Trump.
Trump does brag about it and did so again in a video on his social media site this month.
This 50-year battle over Roe v. Wade took it out of the federal hands and brought it into the hearts, minds, and vote of the people in each state. It was really something. Now it's up to the states to do the right thing.
The challenge is when states do things with which Trump does not agree, like Florida, and like Arizona, where the state Supreme Court upheld an 1800s ban on nearly all abortions. Voters in Arizona and Florida will both have abortion rights measures on their November ballots. Similar initiatives in Kansas and Ohio over the last 2 years have been losing propositions for Republicans. And Trump is reminding supporters about the electoral vulnerability of abortion.
Like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture and, in fact, to save our country, which is currently, and very sadly, a nation in decline.
It's a vulnerability Biden is pressing.
Donald Trump is worried voters are going to hold him accountable for the cruelty and chaos he created. Folks, the bad news for Trump is we are going to hold him accountable. We are. He should be held accountable.
As part of its push on reproductive rights, the Biden administration this week strengthened medical records privacy for people traveling across state lines. It's aimed at protecting women who live in states where abortion is illegal from being prosecuted in that state for having an abortion elsewhere. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
11 Republicans who submitted a document to Congress falsely declaring that Donald Trump beat Joe Biden in Arizona in the 2020 presidential election were charged Wednesday with conspiracy, fraud, and forgery. That's the fourth state to bring charges against what is called fake electors. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. TikTok's chief executive said on Wednesday the social media company expects to win a legal challenge to block legislation signed into law by President Biden that he said would ban its popular short video app used by 170 million Americans.
We aren't going anywhere. We are confident and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts. The facts and the Constitution are on our side, and we expect to prevail again.
So what is the likelihood that the U.S. can ban or deplatform TikTok? Joining us now to talk about this is Seth Schachner, Managing Director of Strat Americas, a Los Angeles-based consultancy that provides strategic guidance and helps clients with media and technology partnerships. The CEO raised this point. It's unclear whether this is going to be constitutional, right? Banning an app?
Yeah. I mean, I think the legal frameworks for it or the regulatory frameworks have been unclear. I mean, the last administration tried a couple of times, I think, through the Commerce Department, to, I would call it deplatform it, which is probably a more accurate way to look at it. It isn't really an outright ban per se, but, unsuccessfully. I would add, at least in the U.S., there is something called CFIUS that is, both houses participate on, that look at the national security implications of foreign investment. That's actually a equally, if not more serious thing that could also come into effect. So there's a bunch of different levers, at least in the U.S., around it. But yeah, it is true. The past legal challenges to it in terms of trying to force a deplatforming were unsuccessful at the federal level, and I think for the most part on the state level as well.
There was another story related to this, not TikTok, but in Australia there was the stabbing of that bishop, and people shot video with their phones, put it on Facebook, put it on X. And the government asked these companies to take it down. Facebook said yes. X said no. What do you do as a government? I mean, I could argue both sides of that argument.
Yeah. There's been plenty of things that the Australians and the Indians have done things even prior to, specific incidents happening. If I recall, they moved against TikTok a while back during the Trump administration. Well, look, I don't know if there's one answer. I do think within reason, what the EU is doing with the DSA and the recently announced AI initiatives is more forward-looking, ambitious, and is, in my view, a good attempt to try and get arms around some of the issues that are presented by these things and try to get out in front of them. And I know I'm not a fan of regulation, but I've been impressed every time I've been over there and even met with some of their ministers, some of the events I've been to, in terms of how they're thinking about this and how they're trying to kind of set precedents to get arms around it.
If you had to bet on it today, do you think, and ByteDance doesn't sell, do you think TikTok's going to get shut down in the U.S.?
The thing that happened the last few days are surprising to me. I've been following the story for 2 or 3 years now since multiple attempts were made in the last administration. I wasn't sure it was going to move through the Senate the way it did. I know it kind of got appended to a broader bill. So I was actually pretty surprised by it. But now, given that it's been signed into law, and president signed it, both houses have voted for it, I do think this is headed towards a sale. And I'd call this a deplatforming, not a ban. So I do think that it will probably move in that direction. Yeah, and I wasn't so sure up until this thing happened so quickly.
Seth Schachner, Managing Director of Strat Americas. The United States isn't the only nation with this problem, and TikTok is not the only app that's problematic. Paytm is a popular payment app in India, and it's been facing government restrictions on business because of its Chinese connections. Henry Wilkins has this story from Mumbai.
Everyone from big retailers to local butchers display Paytm QR codes, which customers scan with their smartphones and in seconds deposit their funds into the merchant's account. But since March, India's central bank has stopped customers from making deposits to Paytm's banking arm because of what they say is the company's lack of compliance with national banking rules. This has caused some vendors, like Lala Ram Chowdhury, to drop Paytm. He says he took all his money out of his Paytm account and stopped using it. He adds that money would usually go to Paytm before reaching his bank account, and he was afraid government restrictions might mean his money would get stuck and never reach his account. Experts and local media say the curbs on Paytm have been prompted by not only a lack of compliance with bank rules, but also a Chinese firm's 9.88% stake in Paytm's parent company. The move, experts say, is part of a wider trend of Indian curbs against Chinese tech companies. The Indian government has restricted or banned other Chinese tech companies. The video sharing app TikTok and mobile phone manufacturer Xiaomi are two high-profile examples. One local journalist who has followed India's scrutiny of Chinese tech companies says the trend can be traced back to a military clash between India and China on its shared border 4 years ago. Abhinandan Mishra is with the Sunday Guardian.
The government started taking a hard stance after the Galwan incident in June 2020. In the last few years, India and the U.S. have become much closer, so there is a strategic interest also involved.
The U.S. and India share a geopolitical rivalry with China, and both are concerned that relying too much on China's tech could pose a security threat. Tricia Ray of the Atlantic Council says few examples have surfaced yet of China exploiting the presence of its tech firms in India.
Again, that's, of course, a point that Beijing frequently brings up as well. A lot of the threat is hypothetical. The point being, we do not want to get to a point where it is no longer a hypothetical threat, and then Beijing has actually leveraged those interdependencies and made them a threat.
What is clear is that Indian consumers are becoming wary of companies seen to be connected to China. Satya Prakash Shukla is a Mumbai taxi driver. He says he has a Paytm machine for taking fares, but recently customers have been wary of using the service because rumours about it are circulating. He says his real issue is with FASTag, however. Meanwhile, Paytm's troubles have continued. On April 16th, Reuters reported that the Indian government deferred approval of Paytm's new $6 million investment in its payment arm because of concerns about Chinese shareholding in the parent company. Paytm has said such claims are false and misleading. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Mumbai, India.
And finally, in the first Star Trek movie, the NASA probe Voyager comes back to Earth, having been rescued and beefed up by an alien machine race. It's sort of not that crazy. Today, Voyager 1 is 24 billion kilometers from Earth. It was launched in 1977. And NASA just got it to start sending data back for the first time in 6 months. Joining us now is Linda J. Spilker, a senior research scientist and planetary scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I cannot get over how extraordinary this whole thing is. Let's start with where this satellite is, this probe is.
The two Voyager spacecraft flew by the four outer planets in 1977, then crossed the heliosphere, the bubble controlled by the solar wind, and crossed the heliopause. And now both Voyagers are in interstellar space, the furthest man-made objects out there.
How far is it from Earth?
Well, Voyager 1 is about 15 billion miles from the Earth, and Voyager 2, on a slightly slower trajectory, is about 13.6 billion miles from the Earth. And to give you an example of how far that is, if you take the distance from the Earth to the Sun, call that one astronomical unit, then Voyager 1 is 163 times further away
than the Earth is from the sun.
That's, explain why that is so extraordinary.
It's extraordinary because you're getting to the point where our sun is starting to look like a bright star, and we're looking back at our own solar system as though we're looking at a much more distant solar system. And so we've passed the planets and the bulk of the material in the solar system, and we're flying through the space between the stars.
This is a really old piece of equipment. When was it launched?
The two Voyager spacecraft were both launched in 1977.
So in the 40-something years that this was launched, talk to us about the technology, what it was back then and what it is now. Try to give us some perspective about...
some examples of the difference in technology between when the Voyager were launched and today. One of the ones that is really intriguing for me has to do with the fact that each Voyager has an 8-track tape recorder on board. We use that to record images and data. For instance, when we were behind the planets and didn't have contact with Earth. But it literally was an 8-track tape recorder where the tape moved across the heads. And on Voyager 1, we still use that 8-track tape recorder. It's still working out 15 billion miles away. And it's just amazing. We record science data and then play it back. Another is the size of the memory, that each of the Voyagers has a memory that's about the size of the memory you have on your key fob.
Linda J. Spilker at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform or get the VOA app. You can also see us online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Standing up for freedom and human rights is simply the right thing to do, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken at the recent release of the 2023 Country Reports on Human Rights Practices. These reports, he explained, present a factual, systematic account of human rights records across nearly 200 countries and territories. The report illustrates that there is much work to be done to uphold the rights set out in the Universal Declaration, said Secretary Blinken.
We once again see human rights and the rule of law under stress in more ways and in more places across the globe. Governments continue to lock up citizens who challenge those in power and call for a better future, from Belarus to Venezuela. Many are young. Of the roughly 1,000 political prisoners in Cuba, the average age is just 32.
Tragically, along with opposition leader Alexei Navalny's unjust imprisonment in a Russian penal colony, incarceration can come with abuse and even death, said Secretary Blinken.
Governments like Russia also arbitrarily detain foreign nationals for political purposes, using human beings as bargaining chips. Paul Whelan, Evan Gershkovich, and every unjustly held individual deserves to go free. The United States and our many partners will keep working every day to reunite them with their families and to hold accountable governments that engage in this deplorable practice.
The report documents atrocities reminiscent of humanity's darkest moments, said Secretary Blinken.
In Sudan, both the Sudanese Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces have committed war crimes. Rohingya in Burma, Uyghurs in Xinjiang, each victims of genocide and crimes against humanity. The United States will continue to raise our deep concerns directly with the governments responsible.
Governments are deploying artificial intelligence to spread disinformation and even tracking people based on their DNA. Nevertheless, 2023 saw some encouraging developments, noted Secretary Blinken. Estonia, Japan, and Mauritius advanced the rights of LGBTQI+ individuals. Unions from South Africa to Mexico to Brazil improved working conditions and advanced workers' rights to organize. And Jordan took steps to ensure that children with disabilities could attend school. These bright spots are an important reminder that progress on human rights is indeed possible, said Secretary Blinken, as long as committed individuals in every part of the globe continue to work to uphold fundamental dignity for all people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.